You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm David Lazarus from the Los Angeles Times, sitting in for Larry Mantle. I'll be back here tomorrow as well, very glad to say. Well, today is the big day for thousands of California couples, same-sex couples, as they tie the knot statewide. We're going to be talking in just a little bit about same-sex parenting. What's the current thinking on how it all plays out for the kids? And we'll be welcoming your phone calls on that subject as well. Before we do that, let's go out into the field and see how things are looking among those getting hitched. Let's stop in first with Carrie Kahn, NPR reporter at the Kern County Clerk's Office. Carrie, how are things looking out there?
Well, there was a lot of people that showed up early this morning to be first in line, and you had to have an appointment. About six or seven lesbian couples, mostly. There were two gay couples. Men came and they got their licenses. And the big controversy here in Kern County is that the county clerk said that she would no longer perform any marriages. You used to be able to get your license and then you walk into the little chapel there and she would, marry you. But she said after the Supreme Court overturned the ban that she would not be performing any marriages. So all the couples went outside and there were ecumenical ministers there that did some weddings out in under the shade because it's already about 90 degrees here in Bakersfield. And they performed a lot of weddings, not a very intimate affair. There was a lot of reporters. There were a lot of friends and families and supporters. But they did about seven weddings before I left.
Now, the Kern County clerk has cited religious reasons for this. Is there some sour grapes at all among people?
No, she did not cite religious reasons. She would not. She said that her reasons were space considerations and budget constraints. And she was asked to produce what she felt the cost loss, estimate of that. And she said that the county was losing about $18,000 performing these marriages and that they would lose even more when there would be a rush for gay and lesbian couples to come in and get married. So she has not spoken to much of the press. She did give an interview to the Los Angeles Times, and she declined to say if it was her religious beliefs. But she did say that she has retained counsel from the Alliance Defense Fund in case there was some sort of legal action against them. And the Alliance Defense Fund is a conservative law firm that is working to ban gay marriages in California.
All right, Carrie, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Now let's head down to Norwalk, where we have Adolfo Guzman-Lopez of KPCC. He's at the L.A. County Clerk's Office. Adolfo, how do things look down
David,
there?
David, I'm sitting under the big tent that county officials have set up here. They've set it up for about 500 people. This is the waiting area. This is kind of the midway point. They set up a line where at 8 o'clock this morning, there were about 100 people. A couple of people, the first couple in line, had been waiting since 10 o'clock last night. It took them about an hour and 20 minutes to go through this process, go pay the $70 for their marriage license and the $25 for the ceremony. Dean Logan, the acting registrar recorder, officiated in their ceremony, and they left, as I said, about an hour and a half later.
What is the mood generally?
Well, there are people who are, and it's mostly gay couples here, with a smattering of heterosexual couples here getting married. A couple of them, the heterosexual couples, didn't know that today was the first day that gay marriages were allowed. People are upbeat. There's some family members here with some of the couples. I have to say, though, that they're right now the couples getting married are outnumbered about 2-1 between county officials, volunteers who are officiating the ceremonies, and reporters.
Well, I'm curious, before we let go of that point, the heterosexual couples who weren't aware of this, did they see this as adding to the joy of the day or something of a distraction?
They wouldn't say it was a distraction. The one couple I talked to was a little bit uncomfortable, but they didn't want anything to rain on their parade, so to speak.
There was a story in the paper today, Adolfo, about some in the gay and lesbian community saying we want to be very careful with the imagery that comes out of today so that we don't send a message to our opponents that they can exploit to add a carnival-like feeling to this. Have you gotten a sense that people are going out of their way to try and keep things somber and a little bit subdued?
Well, there were some opponents here today. There's a woman standing in line at before 8 this morning who was carrying a placard with a biblical passage that read, "Marriage is to be held in honor," a woman who lives in nearby Bellflower, and she is opposed to gay marriage. She feels that it is tearing apart society. There was a man here from Montebello who was taking a more laid-back approach. He was sitting next to this tent, and he said that he was approaching people on a very casual basis, and said that they were very resistant, and that, no surprise there. But it's not festive. People are happy. Some people are carrying balloons. One couple I saw here not long ago had crocheted some scarves that they were wearing around their necks, and that certainly made them look festive.
Are the protesters at least being respectful of the occasion?
They are. The woman in line this morning did engage in a little back and forth with a couple of two men who were in their late 50s, early 60s, and there was a back and forth, a very religious position that she was taking, and their argument was a civic argument about the rights of gay couples being the same as the rights of heterosexual couples in the face of city government, county government, state government, federal government.
But generally speaking, they're not getting in the faces of people. They're not basically ruining the day for people.
That's not their approach this morning. The few opponents that decided to show up here at the Norwalk Courthouse.
All right. Adolfo Guzman-Lopez from KPCC, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome, David.
And now let's stray a little further afield. Touched in with Stephen Cuevas of KPCC. He's the Inland Empire reporter in Indio. He's at the Riverside County Clerk's Office, and that's the one closest to Palm Springs. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Hey, David.
So how do things look where you're standing?
Oh, pretty great. You know, as in other cities, in other counties, couples were lining up before 8 o'clock. So far, it's been out here, it's been roughly two dozen gay couples coming for their marriage licenses, some getting married, you know, just moments after they get those licenses. It kind of seems like there's more people, actually, because it's a small clerk's office, and a lot of couples are bringing family with them, you know, mothers and fathers, and even one couple who has, I think it was 5 adopted kids, so they were in tow as well.
Do you get a sense that people want to tie the knot today, or they're just picking up the license?
It seemed almost kind of 50-50. I was kind of surprised with how many ceremonies were actually going on today. I talked to people who were getting married today, and I talked at length to a lesbian couple who've been together for about 40 years who didn't want to get married today and have something specific planned, very private, for later in the month with family and friends at a nice little private place. Other people felt like they, in a way, sort of wanted to make a statement affirming this decision by the state Supreme Court, and also just showing people in their own community and at large that they're just ordinary people. You know, this one lesbian couple said, you know, we're just a boring couple like the one next door to you. You know, we plant flowers and mow the lawn and pick up the paper, and, you know, that's about it.
Welcome to married life, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've been hearing for days that this is going to be such a large event. We've been hearing from all the public officials who've been ramping up their resources, preparing for a deluge of matrimony. And yet today it seems as if it's starting relatively slowly. And considering how hot things are going to be today, I had thought that most people would do it early instead of late. Do you get a sense the press might have overreacted to this story?
You know, it kind of felt that way out here because the first marriage was announced beforehand, or the first ceremony was announced a couple days in advance, and the young male couple, they were outnumbered. You know, they and their family were outnumbered, like, you know, 25-1 by media. I was surprised to see so many reporters and cameramen out all the way out here. I think for that event, yes, but it's hard to say. It's hard to say, really. I wouldn't want to comment on how, you know, the media is sort of responding to this. Out here, I know the local papers, the local TV stations are sticking pretty close to it. The Palm Springs newspaper is here all day and is probably going to events in the evening as well.
After talking to some of the initial couples to tie the knot, is there a sense that the early ones really want to make a statement, a public statement about who they are and why they have a right to do this, as opposed to those who will come after when the media packs up their cameras and their lights, who simply want to focus more on their own family.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as I was saying, you encountered both out here, continued to encounter that there are still people here waiting to get their applications and to do their ceremonies. Yeah, I think a lot of the people who didn't marry today wanted all the press there, wanted the spotlight on them, even if they tend to be kind of private folks because this issue is so important to them. And at least one couple I talked to said, this is just the start of our activism now, getting married and showing people that as I said, we're just an ordinary couple. And, showing them that we are not entirely confident that voters are going to support this in November. And it's important that we all come forward and assure them that this is just ordinary stuff, that we're just regular couples.
And what about the public officials? Were they excited about today's nuptials, or is this just business as usual for them?
Well, the Coachella Valley tends to be pretty gay-friendly. The clerk's office, sort of bent over backwards to accommodate the little crush of people they had this morning. They had tables set up out front. Walk-ins were welcome, unlike some counties. You could make an appointment if you wanted to. You were encouraged to, but they're happy today to accept walk-ups, and then you just have to take a number like at a delicatessen, and then wait to sort of go in and see one of the clerks who sort of help you go through all your paperwork. So they've been very patient, very accommodating. There are a couple of deputized city officials from Palm Springs who came out this morning to marry folks. And they're also having ceremonies at the city hall in that city.
And very quickly, has there been any talk among people about the upcoming ballot initiative that might, if not annul all this activity, then at least challenge it?
Yes, it's on people's minds, but, they weren't going to let that sort of steal the day. But it's on people's minds for sure. Those who are getting married today are confident that it will be defeated in November. And that their marriages won't be annulled. And those who, who are going to wait a couple of weeks and maybe get married next month or the month after, also feel that even if it is approved by voters, that the marriages that they have beforehand will not be annulled.
Stephen Cuevas, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, David.
Don't you go anywhere, because we're going to be talking about what comes next, same-sex parenting. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC.
Programming on 89.3 KPCC is supported by the California Endowment, working to improve the health and healthcare of California's diverse communities. At the California Endowment, community matters.
This is 89.3 KPCC online at kpcc.org. A military judge has dismissed charges against a Marine officer accused of failing to investigate the killings of 24 Iraqis. Charges were dismissed today against Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Chassani after defense attorneys raised concerns that a four-star general overseeing the prosecution was improperly influenced by an investigator probing the shootings in Haditha 3 years ago. Chassani was the highest-ranking officer implicated in the case. Well, now that same-sex couples can get married in California, what happens to domestic partnerships? One legal expert says the legislature will eventually have to figure that out.
Clearly, they were created as a marriage substitute, and with marriage equality, there's a real question about their continuing vitality and the need for them.
Lawrence Levine teaches at the University of the Pacific McGeorge School of Law. He says lawmakers will likely wait to look at the question until voters decide in November whether same-sex marriage should be unconstitutional. Secretary of State Deborah Bowen says existing partnerships will remain intact and same-sex couples can still sign up as domestic partners. It's 10:21.
Little League, music lessons, summer camp. Raising kids costs real money. For some, those costs include wheelchairs, medication, and regular therapy.
When I found out Daniel had cerebral palsy, Dylan was diagnosed with ADD. A month later,
I was told Dakota was mentally retarded.
Kathy Harvey is raising three disabled children. She gets most of their medical and social services for free. Listen for her story this Friday on 89.3 KPCC.
This is Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm David Lazarus from the LA Times, sitting in for Larry Mantle. And I do want to remind you that Air Talk with Larry Mantle will be traveling to the Beverly Hills Public Library on Tuesday, June 24th at 6:30 p.m. for a one-hour discussion about the proposed West Side extension to the subway. That's the subway to the sea. Public is invited to attend. For more information, you can go to kpcc.org. And if you're interested in attending, please RSVP to airtalk@kpcc.org. Well, we were just out in the field with some of our reporters talking about the activities on this, the first official day of same-sex marriages throughout the state. Well, first comes love, then comes marriage, then comes, well, junior. Or phrasing that another way, what do Vice President Dick Cheney and the parents of many of today's couples have in common? They're about to be the grandparents of children from same-sex marriages. There's no real estimate on how many children we're talking about. It could be in the thousands. It could be even more. The question that arises, how do kids from same-sex marriages adjust? Is there any difference at all, or are there, in fact, significant differences in the nurturing and raising of such kids? We'll be taking your calls momentarily on this, and anybody who's had an experience along these lines or knows anybody who's had an experience along these lines is very welcome to call. But first, let's lay out the landscape. We are joined by Judy Apple. She's executive director of Our Family Coalition. Ms. Appel, welcome very much to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
So what's the current thinking in terms of how same-sex parenting affects kids?
Well, you know, there have been many studies that have been done, some studies that have been done, and they have all of the peer-reviewed studies that have been done show what we, who are parenting kids, because in addition to working with Our Family Coalition, I'm also the mother of two children, have seen, and that is that our children do as well as children who are raised in heterosexual relationships, and the sociological and psychological and mental health factors and academic factors that researchers look at. So there really isn't a difference in how our children do. They're normal in every way. And, you know, many of our families are very intentional families, and we think very long and hard before we have kids. And, you know, we're raising our kids just like everybody else. We wake up in the morning, we, you know, get our kids ready for school, we join the PTA, we take them to soccer practices, we run around with them and feed them breakfast and put them to bed at night. And, you know, really it's raising kids in a same-sex household is just like raising kids in a heterosexual home.
And over the last decade or so, it must be pointed out that the stance that you've just laid out was essentially espoused as well by the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Medical Association, the American Psychological Association, the American Psychiatric Association. So it seems as if the consensus in the scientific and medical community is that, indeed, it doesn't matter if you're raised in a hetero or a same-sex household.
That's exactly right.
Well, okay, but just devil's advocate, I have a 6-year-old kid at home, and I can clearly see that he has his mommy moments and he has his daddy moments. What does a same-sex couple do in those situations?
Well, you know, I have a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old at home, and they have mama moments and they have mommy moments, and it's really very similar. And sometimes, you know, sometimes I'm the good mom and sometimes I'm the bad mom. I'm sure you've experienced that too.
And, big time.
And we, what?
Big time.
Big time, right? And you know, we just work with that, and we're very fortunate. We have a lot of grandparents who are very active in our kids' lives, and you know, our kids have access to their grandfathers and to many other men in their lives, and that's really valuable. And when it comes down to it, they have two parents, and they have the same kind of relationship with us as our many friends with a father and a mother have with their parents.
Okay, we are talking about same-sex parenting, and I am throwing the switchboard open at this time. Our numbers are 866-893-5722 or 866-893-KPCC. If you've had any experience along these lines, whether from the parenting front or the kid front, or you know anybody who has, Your thoughts, your comments, your questions are very welcome. Again, 866-893-5722. We're also joined by Matthew Staver. He's founder and chairman of the Liberty Council. Mr. Staver, welcome to this program.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you.
So I'm guessing that you're not going to look at things the same way that Ms. Appel did.
You guessed right. And I certainly would disagree with some of the statements that was said there. In fact, there are some studies that indicate that children do fare different when they're raised in a same-sex household versus a heterosexual household with a mom and a dad. There's a lot of studies, for example, outside of the same-sex arrangement that say that children do best when they're raised with a mom and a dad, that gender, moms and dads, male and female, do make a difference in the well-being of children. We know the phenomenon, for example, of fatherlessness, and we know the problems that that creates, particularly with males, when they are raised in the absence of a father. We also know of studies, for example, that looked at various categories of children raised in heterosexual households, same-sex households, and single-parent households. And in every measurable category, the children raised in the heterosexual household with a mom and a dad did better in that particular category, except in one. They had about nine or so different variables that they studied in terms of their social adjustment, their mental and physical well-being, and so forth, and their achievements, and so forth. And only one category did they do differently, and they did better in every category with the mom and dad, except in one, and that was in the area of more self-independence in terms of having different values than their parents, and that was in the same-sex household. And some people may consider that good, and some people may consider that a bad characteristic, but the bottom line was is that in every other category, the children did best when they had a mom and a dad, and it only makes sense.
Well, can let me just cut through the jargon for a sec. When you talk about doing best and whatnot, let's put that in real down-to-earth terms. Are we saying that kids from heterosexual families are better adjusted, do better at school, fare better with their peer groups, and generally do not have rebelliousness and rebel without a cause streaks? Is that it in layman's terms?
That's it in layman's terms. In fact, they did nine different categorical examinations, and in all of those, except for one, they all did better in the area of being raised with a mom and a dad. And it simply makes sense from a common sense standpoint that children need both genders.
Can you tell me which studies we're talking about? Because I've done a lot of reading on this, and I didn't see anything that said that.
This is a particular study that actually one of them was done in the Harvard it was published in a Harvard publication.
When?
There have been studies done in the Netherlands, for example, with regards to same-sex households versus non-same-sex households. There's also a study done by Stacy and Biblarts, and these two individual researchers from the University of Southern California, they actually support same-sex marriage.
Well,
but
I have
also
to say
concluded
that
girls that are raised in a lesbian household are much more likely than girls raised in a single family or dual gender household.
Let's let Ms. Appel get a response there. Judy Appel?
Well, I think that it's interesting that you say that because clearly the American Academy of Pediatrics in their recent review of all of the research that had been done about co-parent and second-parent adoption by same-sex parents and parenting, as well as the American Psychological Association in their very recent review, reached quite the opposite conclusion when they did an across-the-board review of all of the respectable peer-reviewed articles that had been and research that had been done over the last couple of decades, and in fact found just the opposite, and found what we see, as you said, common sense day-to-day, that what really matters is having loving parents. And I think there is some research that shows the impact of having two loving parents, but I think the most of the research represents that having loving parents and caring parents is the factor that makes a difference. And that, in fact, there is no notable difference between the all of the factors that you were talking about for kids who are raised by same-gender parents or by heterosexual parents. And so it's, again, it's the American Academy of Pediatrics, a very reputable and certainly an unbiased institution, and the American Psychological Association did some very extensive reviews, some of them led by the head of the Pediatrics Department of Tufts, Ellen Perrin, who's a very reputable researcher, and really have reached just the opposite conclusion.
All right. Now, Mr. Staver, I'm sorry to have interrupted you. You were talking about girls that were raised in same-sex households Does that...
Yes, the study, the researchers, Stacy and Biblarts, they're both professors in the University of California University System, and they are actually advocates of same-sex marriage, so they personally are in favor of it. But their research indicated that girls that are raised in a lesbian household, out of any other category, whether girls that are raised in a single mother household or a dual-gender household, are more likely to engage in sexual activity earlier in life, more often, and engage in more risky kind of sexual activity. So even in that particular situation, I think it wouldn't be healthy for that to happen, and yet it actually happens more frequently, more often, and more early in a child's life, at least in a female with a female child, than in a lesbian household than in any other household combined.
Now, just to be fair, the researchers, Judith Stacy and Timothy Biblarts, I read their report and I read some of the fallout from afterwards, and they said that opponents to same-sex parenting, such as yourself, basically cherry-picked their report and took out the results that backed up their overall findings, but generally speaking, that they didn't see much difference.
Well, generally speaking, they did not see much difference, but they did point out the difference. They also say specifically that their specific research cannot be just completely relied upon because of the self-selection that actually happens. And whenever you have self-selection within statistical research, it automatically skews the outcomes as well, because instead of having random sampling or blind sampling, you have individuals that self-select. And so you have the best kinds of individuals that come forth, or those individuals may have a certain point to prove when they do self-select.
All right.
Well, and that's what's exciting, because now we're starting to see more and more studies that are done with random cross-the-board samples where they're able to pull out the gay and lesbian couples and look at them individually. And that's where we're seeing the exact same results. And you know, this is certainly an area where I think we all agree we should we can have more research. But, you know, when it comes down to this issue of marriage, what we really need to get back to is the fact that that it's a question of fairness, and that our laws should not treat anyone unfairly. And in fact, it's really about the couples, and that couples need to have the right to marry, and that's a fundamental right that's protected by the Constitution. And our kids benefit from recognizing that their families are subject to the same rights and fairness as every other Californian.
All right, we're talking about same-sex parenting and the effect, if any, on the kids. Your thoughts on this topic are very welcome. 866-893-5722 or 866-893-KPCC. Let's go to the phones right now. Sue calling from Mount Washington. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. My partner and I have a 7-year-old. He was my partner, Carrie, who was artificial insemination. And not only is he gold honor roll on top of his class, he's emotionally one of the most well-adjusted kids there. He's very smart. We're both smart parents, but we're loving parents. And so he's really a clever guy. He's kind of scary smart. He once negotiated with the associate principal, instead of getting in trouble, he negotiated the class into a pizza party for behaving better.
Ooh, I want that kid in my class.
So at 7. So, you know, I don't see anything that would question not only our ability as parents. I see one of the most confident, well-adjusted leaders in his classroom at age 7.
Sue, let me ask you, is there any appreciable thing to observe about your son not having a male figure in his life day in, day out?
Day in, day out, I think that he does miss that. I wish that we had more male friends, but, you know, he plays at his friend's house, he plays with his friend's parents, and he's very, very close with his uncle, who is just a brilliant engineer and a very handy guy. So he goes to his uncle's workshop and plays with tools and learns that stuff. And I think that helps, but I do see that he would benefit from more of that. But we just have to work harder in making that available to him as parents.
All right, Sue, thank you very much. I appreciate your thoughts. Let's take another call. Stephen calling from Pasadena. Welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
The one statement that made me call was the statement regarding there's absolutely no difference between raising a child in the separate situations, and I think that's a pretty audacious thing to say. You have you know, gigantic repercussions socially with children when they become teens. When you're talking about, for example, given the soccer practice example is a perfect one, and we take our kids to soccer practice and we have one of their teammates who's got a same-gender parent situation. That kid is teased, harassed, and confused about who he is on a daily basis.
How old are the kids on this team?
14.
And they tease him because of his parents?
Absolutely. How are you made? Who's your dad? Did you get your dad out of the phone book, or did you just go down and pick one off the shelf? Those are the kind of statements that kid has to endure every single day.
And what does that kid say in response?
He doesn't say anything because the parents are like, they're just ignorant. They don't know anything. It's okay. Just ignore them. You know, that's what you get. And so you have a kid that actually fractures, in this case, a soccer team, where you have everybody kind of looking at him like he's a little bit of a freak, and they like him. He's a good kid. It's not there's anything wrong with him necessarily, other than he's entirely confused where he stands socially.
Just out of curiosity, have you ever spoken to the kids on the team and said, hey, why are you saying these things?
You know, the parents deal with their own children on the teams, and it's not really any one parent's place to stand up and tell another kid what to do. I mean, if he's hitting and punching and pushing and being extremely mean, that's one thing. But when you have an entire group of kids, you know, acting up and maybe out of place, of course the coach says, hey, come on, guys, quit it. That's it. But, you know, a lot of it happens out of sight, too. You know, it's like it's out of the corner of the eye and it's muddled under press and while they're in line and, you know, there's only so much stop it you can say. If it's the natural reaction to the children, that's the reaction to a point.
All right.
But only so much can be said. If I tell another kid, it's like, hey, stop saying anything to him, the parent is going to come to me and say, stop telling my kid what to do. That's how we feel about it.
Okay, Stephen, I appreciate your thoughts on that. Thank you very much. Very quickly, Judy Appel of the Our Family Coalition, what's the answer for a kid who's being teased?
You know, we're not denying that there's bias out there in the world, and kids will tease and kids will be really mean. And you know, the thing is that it's really up to the adults to help train kids about the importance of fairness and the importance of equality and the importance of respect. And just like we don't allow and we wouldn't permit teasing based on other factors that a kid might have who's different in any group of kids, we also need to teach kids to respect one another. And when I hear that story, you know, of course my heart breaks for the kid, and it also shows us that one of the ways that we help eliminate bias is by really teaching the lesson of fairness and equality. And I truly, truly believe that Californians believe in fairness. They believe that we all have the same right to have access to fundamental rights in this country, and that in this state, and that everybody and that those are lessons that we teach our kids. And
all right, the conversation,
an important historic moment.
The conversation will continue momentarily. Your thoughts are welcome. 866-893-5722. I'm David Lazarus in for Larry Mantle. This is Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC.
California Report stories on 89.3 KPCC are made possible by the Evelyn and Walter Haas Jr. Fund, the AARP and its 3 million California members, working to ensure access to affordable quality health care for all Californians, online at aarp.org, and by OSH, Complete Home and Garden Service to Californians for over 75 years. Ideas, tips, and solutions at osh.com. Well, as you've been hearing on Air Talk, gay couples seeking marriage licenses began at 8 this morning when county clerk offices opened across the Southland. Same-sex marriages became legal in California late yesterday, and the Supreme Court lifted the ban on gay marriages last month. Well, KPCC special correspondent Kitty Feldy looks into how gay marriage affects real estate transactions.
If you're a straight married couple in California and you buy a house together, most of the time that dwelling is community property. In real estate ease, that's joint tenants with right of survivorship.
If one person dies, then the other person automatically succeeds to the other 50% of the property.
Jonathan Zasloff is a UCLA law professor specializing in real estate. So what happens if a gay or lesbian couple gets married and buys a house together? Zasloff says California's existing domestic partnership law already makes it possible for same-sex partners to own community property.
The effect of the deed of two domestic partners purchasing property would be the exact same thing as married couples purchasing property.
But what about the forms? A statewide legislative committee is reviewing deeds and other legal documents to decide whether California needs to change any of the language so it'll reflect the new marriage landscape. Kitty Feldy, 89.3 KPCC.
Well, another hot one in the Southland today, highs topping 100. Looks like it's going to stay that way right through the week. It's 10:41 at 89.3 KPCC.
You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm David Lazarus, sitting in for Larry Mantle. Our subject this hour is same-sex parenting, pro and con. Your thoughts on this are welcome. 866-893-5722. Let's take another call right now. James calling from Beverly Hills. Welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon. Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I just wanted to comment on Judy had said earlier in the program, or this discussion, about there being sort of a, you know, mommy and a mama in same-sex parenting. I'm a homosexual male myself. My partner and I plan to adopt a child, and I think that dynamic is definitely, to an extent, of course, there. I can say that there's one of us who, in parental situations, acts a bit more like a mother or a father. And I think that the dynamic, like I said, even if it's not in a heterosexual couple, is still there to some extent.
And so the family adapts, as does the kid?
Definitely. And, you know, it's unrealistic to assume that, you know, oh, everything's going to be completely fine and it's going to be no different whatsoever. That doesn't make sense. But that split dynamic of there being, you know, a motherly and a fatherly role definitely shows, and definitely, I believe, is present in same-sex parents who do have children.
All right, James, thank you very much for your thoughts. Matthew Staver of the Liberty Council, as we've been hearing, it sounds like same-sex parents do adjust to the different circumstances, as do the kids. So why is it that we don't just respect these families and figure that they'll find their way through?
Well, actually, I think if you've listened to the three of the callers there, it's exactly the opposite. Certainly, there are adjustments. And certainly there are families where the children do adjust very well. But Sue candidly acknowledged that it is a challenge not to have the male figure in the family. And in fact, there is somewhat of that longing or absence of that with the child. And that's what was also mentioned earlier with the boy who was, I think, 14 years of age on the soccer field. And even the last caller suggests that as well. Clearly, I think it is an overstatement to say, as was said at the very beginning of this program, that there's absolutely no difference between children raised with a mom and a dad, male and female, versus children raised with two parents of the same sex. I think that's clearly an overstatement, and I don't think it is proven by either the research or just by common experience. I think there is a difference, and children do fare better when they have that male and female mom and dad there, and certainly you can have more feminine or more masculine or more motherly or more fatherly characteristics that you want to bring into the family. But you cannot, you know, a man cannot be, a father cannot be a mother, and a mother cannot be a father. There are certain characteristics that are, I think, important to that child in terms of seeing how those sexes interact and what those different sexes bring to the family dynamic.
But there was a time not that long ago when a couple that mixed races or mixed religions would have been said to have had the same challenges in trying to raise a well-adjusted child, and yet now we look at that as backward-looking thinking, and that families will adjust, they will make do. How is it different with same-sex couples?
Well, there's only one similarity between those, but there's a lot of differences. The one similarity is with regards to the public acceptance of that and how children may or may not be teased in the situation that was given with the example of the 14-year-old on the soccer field, how other children may tease him that you only have moms or you only have dads or you come from a biracial mom and dad.
All right.
The fact is, within a biracial mother and father, you clearly have the male-female dynamic, and that is still there. And so within that family dynamic, that is still fundamentally important and fundamentally different than a male-male or a female-female dynamic.
I wanted to point out, people have pointed out that I said that it was exactly the same. The point I was making is that we go through all of the same, many of the same struggles that other families do, and many of the same joys of straight families. And that's really the point that I was making. And just kind of to demystify same-sex parents. You know, we wake up in the morning, we get our kids ready for school, we put the Rice Krispies out, you know, we teach them to be respectful to their elders, we teach them to be respectful to their teachers, to do their homework, you know, to you know, believe in God. We, in that way, we are like all other families. Every family is different. Every parent is different. There's a lot of kids that are being raised with and without fathers and mothers, whether they come from same-gender families or not. And, of course, every family is different. Every parent is different. The point I'm making is that we're a part of the community. We're in every community, and we're raising our kids in really healthy ways.
All right, let's take another call. Kathy calling from Sunland. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm a heterosexual, and I was appalled by caller Steve's comments about the soccer team and how he was reporting that these children were teasing this child. And my immediate thought was, well, Steve, you and the parents, the heterosexual parents, are setting a horrific example. You're just like parents, white parents of 40 years ago who allowed your children to taunt the one black child in the classroom. And it really, really upset me. I thought the problem here is with the heterosexual parents, not with the homosexual parents. And Steve should have stepped in and told his child, how dare you let these other boys do this? Stand up. Be the one decent kid. Instead, he's just sitting back and enjoying it.
All right, Kathy, thank you. I appreciate your thoughts on that. 866-893-5722 is the number. Steve calling from Huntington Beach. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi.
I've been a social worker in Connecticut Social Services for 24 years and worked with kids for about 30. It's been my experience that it doesn't matter the sexual orientation of the parents in terms of their parenting skills, and in that sense, I think that doesn't really matter. And certainly, same-gender parents are going to have more intentionality and more focus on being a parent, so it's likely that they would be better parents. But at the same time, I don't think you can say that there's absolutely no impact on a child, that they don't feel some sense of loss.
What sort of loss are you describing, Steve?
Well, for example, if you're a boy and you have two, if your parents are both female, there's going to be a sense of loss that's there because they're not male, and you just won't have the same experience. By the same token, and I think the argument becomes a little fuzzier when you say, what if two gay men have daughters? Then there's got to be some sense of loss that those children feel. Now, are they going to be great in school? Are they going to be successful emotionally? Most likely they'll be great. They'll be on an equal par with parents of a typical family. But at the same time, there's got to be some impact that's not necessarily measurable by psychological instruments.
All right. Thank you very much for that thought. I appreciate that. Matthew Staver, chairman of the Liberty Council. As far as I know, no serial killers have come out of same-sex households.
Well, I don't know about that.
But you get the point, right?
Well, you know, I don't know if that is the point. You know, we're not saying people are going to be serial killers. You know, God knows what ultimately goes into the mind of a serial killer. I think probably wouldn't even want to know. But I'm not saying that they're going to be serial killers. But I think the last caller does point out something. I think that's very important, and that there is some sense of loss. There's got to be some sense of loss. There's got to be some difference in that situation. And so this is a huge social experiment. It's unknown in many respects. And we're not going to know about the impact of this for many years until we see it over a period of generations. Now, the question is, do we want to, as a social policy, enter into that without having any real strong indicators of the impact? And create a policy, which this is not just two individuals who want to get together to have a relationship and be treated the same. California already had that with the domestic partnership law. This is a policy that essentially says, as a policy matter, at the highest level of government, we will create a policy that says it's okay, it's all right, and it's fine to actually deprive a child of having the opposite sex in the household. That's what same-sex marriage essentially does, is that you do not have to have the opposite sex in the household, and that it would permanently deprive a child of even having the opportunity to do so. I think from a policy level, that is a very risky and untested path to go down, and I think we ought to do it with extreme caution.
Let's take one more call. Adriana calling from Westwood. Welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you. I'm a graduate student, and I study child development and cultural development. And I want to make two points. One is that one of your guests talked about common sense. Well, common sense is very much coming from his own biased perspective. If you look at the way that children are raised cross-culturally all over the world, there are a variety of many, many diverse kinds of environments that children grow up in. In many situations, they're raised by primarily women. In many situations, you have sibling caretaking. In many situations, fathers are not that much involved until the children are much older. So to say that there is this common sense notion that a child needs a father and a mother is ridiculous. He has no concept of the way that children are developing in many diverse environments all around the world. The second point I want to make is about child socialization. We're conceptualizing the child as if it's this passive recipient of social information, when actually the child's sex and identity is very much in place by 3 years old, and they're actually active agents in looking for models that represent their own gender identity. And much research, I'll refer your listeners to Kohlberg, shows that children gain much of their information from outside of their parents. They're very much engaged in their society around them. They're not living in this little bubble in their family. The parents provide the love, and one of your guests talked about love, and that's the most important thing. If anything that research has been able to find, that is the most important thing for child development, is love and attachment and caring and a stable environment. But children are able to look to their society at large and other influences for their gender identity development and models and for male and female.
All right. Thank you very much for your thoughts on that. I appreciate it. Judy Appel, director of the Our Family Coalition. The children from same-sex families I've met have been, I guess, as well-adjusted as most kids. But one thing I did notice is they seem to be very tolerant of other people. Is that something that you think comes out of same-sex parenting?
You know, I think that, yes, and I think that, and I think that there's at least one research study that actually shows that one of the one differences that people have seen is that children raised by same-sex couples, and this study I think was done mostly with lesbian couples, did find that children were more tolerant of difference because they themselves are different. And that's really where we need to be heading. We need to be teaching our kids fairness, teaching our kids tolerance. And you know, we already have a policy in this state that allows same-gender couples to have kids and raise kids and parent equally. We have that policy that isn't attached to marriage. The thing about marriage is that it is a question of fairness and equality, and that's what we need to be teaching our kids, not just our kids, not just kids of gay and lesbian parents, but all of our kids need to learn. I think we all share that value of wanting our kids to learn to learn about fairness and equality, and it's an exciting and historic moment, and all of our families are lucky to be a part of it.
All right, our number again, 866-893-5722. Your thoughts are very welcome. Charles calling from South Bay. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good.
I don't normally chime in on this. I'm a 39-year-old male. I was raised by a gay woman, and the gentleman was talking about there not being very many examples of someone like me being raised by a gay woman. I think Ms. Appel is striving to do the best she can, but there are going to be ramifications.
Well, what ramifications? What are you talking about?
Well, I was raised in the gay community. I was raised and have dealt with and been around children who have been raised by gay men, gay women, gay couples. And quite frankly, in my experience, I live in a pretty affluent area. I have a family, and I strove to be as normal as I possibly could, and I think I am. But in my experience, most of the children that I've dealt with, or children of gay couples, are not faring very well. Again, I'm 40 years old, nearly 40 years old.
But when you say not faring very well, are you having emotional problems?
Alcoholism, suicide, all sorts of different things. I've seen it all.
And you attribute that to the family background?
I think so. And again, this is from my experience. And I came from a period of the gay community where it was hidden as much as you possibly could. It's much more out in the open now and much different. But in my parents, or my mom, and I never had a father figure. And most of the people who I dealt with, or most of the children in gay couples, that's you just they hit it, and it wasn't out in the open. They were always in the closet to the point where they actually got married so they can hide it even more.
All right. So I appreciate your thoughts on that. Thank you very much. Let's take another call. Jay calling from Santa Monica. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I have a quick question for Matthew. In terms of adoption, let's say a couple is heterosexual or a couple that is homosexual, and you know, I find that there's no real difference. If there's a couple that is gay and they need to adopt a kid and there's no good straight families around, shouldn't the kid be adopted anyways?
Well, I think there's a lot of straight families around that are willing to adopt. I think what we need to do is reform our adoption laws. We've been working, you know, feverishly on that in some states where it takes years. In fact, I've had people in my own office at Liberty Council that want to adopt. They've gone through the process. They've been approved. And it's been several years now. They've already got two children. They want to adopt another child. And they're ready and willing and able to do it. I've seen families in our own office. One of them, it took several years, and the other one is still waiting, and they're like in their fourth year trying to adopt. So we need to reform the laws so that these adoptions go quicker and smoother. There's a lot of families where you have a mom and a dad that are ready, willing, and able to adopt. And I think what we need to do is reform the laws rather than just assume that there's nobody out there. There are people there. Rather than just simply say, we're going to put this child into a same-sex household, I think, as the previous caller indicated, there is a difference. And that difference goes beyond the implication of just two people who want to get together and love each other. It impacts children. And children, we need to be very, very cautious about what kind of policies we set. Children do best when they are raised in the environment with a mom and a dad. And I think that that's clearly shown. I've spoken to a lot of people who themselves have been raised in same-sex households. And they, like the previous caller, have indicated that there is a difference. And I think that difference is significant and one that we don't want to follow in terms of having a same-sex marriage law like we have now in California.
Judy Appel of the Our Family Coalition, what's the answer to that?
Well, you know, every family is obviously different. And every family has its, you know, and every family has its strengths. And every parent, I think we would all agree, has the things that we can work better at. And I also know many, many people who are raised and have been raised and are being raised in gay and lesbian households, and they're an amazing group of people. You know, and there are people who are doing well and there are people who are not doing well. I'm certainly not saying that every last gay and lesbian person is the best parent. We're a mixed bag just like everybody else, but we are raising kids who are shown to be doing really well in the long run.
All right, Judy Appel, Matthew Staver, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, don't you go anywhere, because coming up, we're going to be looking at where Obama is on picking a vice president. Has he sent out a message? Might look that way. We'll also be looking at the young and restless in China, and we'll have an eagle. Yeah, the musical type right here. This is Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm David Lazarus, in for Larry Mantle.
Thank you. Members